Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. You can download our 2024 sponsor kit on our homepage at onstrategyshowcase.com. This is episode 2 in our 3-episode series titled Startups, Scale-Ups, and Grown-Ups. We're focusing on the role of marketing, the marketing mix, and the role of brand in growth. Here's a clip from today's episode.
First, I would say to most marketers, you should embrace the magic of a budget haiku. You probably need a lot less than what you have. I think, you know, the dominant way we all process the world is through the internet, is through our phones, is through screens. And the internet doesn't like overproduced work. You know, you don't need a phantom cam to get on, you know, a 4x4-inch piece of glass in your hand. I think we have an unfair advantage when it comes to working with celebrities. We've always made them invest in liquid death first before they then, you know, got a little bit of bonus cash or equity. But it caused us to get people that really believed in the brand and weren't just there for one and done. But I think, you know, when you're cutting those big checks, be serious about the people that really, you know, love who you are. I think spending a lot of money on agencies can be the wrong way. They're sometimes just too far away from the real impact of marketing. I had a whole career in agencies, all the major acronyms internationally, the best of the best, and never did I hear a creative department say, hey, what did that campaign really do for sales or the metrics that matter?
That's Dan Murphy, marketing chief at Liquid Death. Now, Liquid Death as a product is simply canned water, now with a series of flavors. Yet it's arguably the purest example of the power of branding. Yes, it's just water, and it's not claiming to be a better water than other waters. Its distinction is the brand, its packaging, its personality, and its outrageous cross-category blending marketing have made it a cultural phenomenon. So next time if you're asked if marketing really works, point out Liquid Death. No surprise that Liquid Death's co-founder and CEO came out of 10 years as a creative working for agencies like Crispin. Dan is joined today by Zach Kitschke. He is CMO of SaaS design platform Canva. As of 2023, Canva's annual recurring revenue was $2 billion. It remains a private company for now, and its recent secondary transaction valued Canva at $26 billion. So far in this series, it's clear why it's not a good time to be thought of as an advertising agency. All things social and short-term performance-oriented are winning the day. Earned media, social, and celebrity collaborations are what it's all about. And wait for it, both Canva and Liquid Death's creative is all done in-house. However, there's also the recognition that growth slows when awareness levels stagnate, and achieving that next tier of growth requires a different level and type of investment. To talk about that, I'm joined for this intro by Connor Archbold, co-CEO of our series sponsor, Tracksuit. So Connor, as companies move from that startup phase into the scale-up phase, it generally involves increased distribution. It means new territories, possibly new geographies. What are some of the things that brands need to be conscious of as they scale up and as they begin to expand?
You've had a bunch of success in that first geography or region, or even vertical or market, and you're thinking of expanding. And so it's always best practice to kind of, you know, run an assessment of whether that opportunity or that problem that you're solving is the same in the new market. We touched on crossing the chasm last time, and another way that people sort of talk about that is the performance plateau. So if you have had success in an early market and you've watched your brand health grow and your awareness and consideration grow, and maybe you've kind of gone from 1 or 2 or 3% up to, you know, 15-20%. Probably what you've seen is, you know, you got distribution and that increased it by 10%. You had some early wins with some creators or some really good advertising, and that bumped you up another couple percent. But there's always a worry that at some point, without consistent, you know, brand messaging and marketing, that you hit this performance plateau.
So when you look at that performance plateau, is the way out of that plateau to begin to look at a better balance between your brand marketing and your performance marketing?
You've grown a lot early on through capturing the low-hanging fruit, and then you flatline because that existing demand has a limit and you can only capture a certain amount of it with your brand and your opportunity as it stands. If you grow your brand health, you grow awareness, you grow consideration, you can start capturing more of the market. And that's when you leave the performance plateau. And that's, again, comes back to that existing demand, future demand argument.
It's Connor Ashball. Thank you with Tracksuit. You can check them out at gotracksuit.com. And here is episode number 2 on scale-ups. Enjoy. So scale-ups is the theme of today's conversation with two terrific brands that have not only been growing tremendously well over the last number of years, but you can certainly look out and see that growth is continuing for both of them. So these are scale-ups, not at the early stage of scaling, but they've progressed beyond that. And so we're really excited to have both Liquid Death and Canva on the show today and to have these two guys. So I wanted to start out first with you, Dan. For those who are not familiar, for that one person who's not familiar with Liquid Death, let's talk about it, what it offers, and whom it targets right now.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think first off, we're a healthy beverage company, and a lot of people might not know that or don't realize it. We sell natural mountain water. We have flavored sparkling. It's really low in calories. We use natural agave nectar, not the high fructose corn syrup stuff. So it's kind of like a healthy soda. We sell iced teas, similar, low calorie, not the caffeine bombs on the market. And recently we got into electrolyte hydration packets, you know, for post-workout or post a long liver workout at the bars the night before. We also have sustainability at our core. So I think the majority of folks, at least in America, are blissfully unaware that 95% or more of single-use plastic bottles wind up in an ocean or a landfill, where our aluminum cans are not only infinitely recyclable, but crucially, the economics are on the side of them getting recycled. We also give a portion of all our profits to great sustainability causes like Five Gyres, Thirst Projects, and others. So what you wind up with is Liquid Death is this magician's sleight of hand trick, or really a sheep in wolf's clothing. You take this thing that's good for you and good for the planet and dress it up like a beer or a hardcore energy drink, and then market it in such a wild, fun way that previously only the unhealthy stuff had a monopoly on. And you get people to effortlessly choose something healthier and more sustainable.
So that's what was always interesting to me when we had the team on for an episode previously. And the line that I remembered most from that was this line that said that we're a water brand that thinks like a beer. Tell us about that. What does that mean? What does it continue to mean today? Or is it still expressed that way?
Well, I think you certainly see the expression in the marketing. If you think about all the funny ads, and there aren't really that many that are truly funny. There's a lot of ads that are the 90s laugh track, you know, sitcom funny, but I'm talking real comedy that competes with things on the internet nowadays. There's not too many, but the ones you probably can name are probably junk food, fast food, beer, booze. So our marketing is very much that. We're in that realm of funny, shareable, ha-ha. But we also, because of the way we look, open up new occasions. You know, you're not going to have a crinkly plastic water bottle and feel comfortable at a house party, a bar, a club, a festival. But a Liquid Death makes you fit in, makes you feel good. And as a consequence of that, for the first time, we have kids that are clamoring to get a Liquid Death water in their lunchbox instead of, you know, 200 milligrams of energy drink caffeine or some real sugary, unhealthy drink.
So do you think, did you originally think about other sodas as being your sort of enemy, or did you think about the wastefulness of plastic, the non-reusable plastic bottles? They claim to be reusable, but not most of them are not. What were you sort of bouncing off or pushing against early on?
You know, death to plastic was certainly an early mission. It still is our mission. It's a mission statement. You know, the description of that is on the cans for sure. But it was really this premise, again, like I laid out, that, you know, was our CEO and co-founder Mike's initial thought. It's like, could you take something healthy and market it in the fun way that unhealthy things are typically marketed? And would that allow people to, you know, use them more often? And I think the answer so far is yes.
So when we look at Canva, Zach, design isn't just for designers. It's one of the lines I love from one of your TV spots. Tell us about what Canva is and what it offers.
Canva's core is really about empowering visual communication for every individual and every organization around the world. And so we really launched with this hypothesis that, you know, everyone had this creativity and need to express themselves visually, but they were simply prohibited by the tools and platforms. This was in a world where to design something, you needed to battle with tools like Photoshop or InDesign that were incredibly expensive. They were incredibly time consuming and really difficult to learn to use. And so, you know, Canva now has an all-in-one platform that makes it incredibly easy to design anything, whether it's, you know, a presentation, social media content, videos, even, you know, documents and sort of brainstorming now with our whiteboards products. And, you know, our growth's really sort of emblematic of the need that I think we solved for so many people. We've grown to over 170 million people using the platform each and every month now in over 190 countries, which I think goes to the fact that we were sort of right at the start there, that that everyone does have this need to communicate visually.
These types of numbers just blow my mind. Does it do the same to you? Because you've been there for 10 to 12 years. You've seen this growth. When you throw out numbers like that, to think that that many people are using your product, it must just be, do you get used to it, or is it as stunning as it is to me?
It is incredible. And I think, you know, it's really testament to the product and the platform, but also the incredible community that we've fostered. I definitely still remember the day where, you know, we'd celebrate getting one user or five people to kind of sign up and use the product. So people using the platform are within organizations, but also within education. So we've got over 30 million students and teachers using the platform for free in the classroom. We've got over 500,000 nonprofits globally, from the World Health Organization to UNICEF and Amnesty and beyond, and sort of large organizations too, whether it's a Salesforce or a Zoom, sort of managing and scaling their brand as well.
So Dan, for you, would you describe Liquid Death at the earliest stages as being brand-led or product-led, and why?
You know, at the earliest stages, it was entirely brand-led because we didn't have a product. It was going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that initial batch done. So Mike's thought was a proof of concept, a fun video that presented it as really real. And he tossed it up on, I think at the time, this was 4 years ago, on Facebook. And it got millions of views, likes, comments, shares, engagement in short order. So it became the ability to raise the seed money to be able to go create the product. So it was all marketing in the early stages.
You guys were like SNL skits, where it was just like profoundly funny and profoundly irreverent. But that, I suppose, was necessary for you to build that brand because you didn't have a lot of paid media. You had to get that content to go viral.
You know, pressure makes diamonds. And that's the DNA that is with Liquid Death to this day, even though we've scaled up and, you know, we've raised more money and we've certainly earned more money. But we still very much look at everything from an earned media lens. And I don't think it's just a smart thing to do if you're a startup. I think it's kind of the only way to break through anymore as a brand. You know, you can't force feed your message through screens, because if you're on that TV screen, somebody's got their phone out in front of them and they're looking at our humorous content in their feed that probably somebody sent them. So, yeah, I mean, the earliest days were about, as we still are now, winning the internet, putting something out there that's genuinely entertaining at the level of everything else you see on the internet, not just what other brands do, getting press to write about something for free instead of needing to spend media dollars to get it out there because it's so ridiculous, so funny, or so over the top. And, you know, also looking at the channels that have that leverage. You know, it's not paid media. It's social media. It's PR. You know, it's our own channels.
It's different, Zach, in your world, because I'll ask you, obviously, how you'll describe it. But I would think of you guys as being more product-led than brand-led in the beginning. Is that, would you agree with that? And why was that for you?
I think it's such a product company. Our products and our brand are inherently one and the same. And what I mean by that, you know, the platform and the sort of premise of Canva, this notion of being empowering and enabling this kind of innate creativity in anyone to be expressed. I'd say the product was actually our first brand touch point. We put a lot of effort and energy into really refining and holding that product experience, you know, to a bar that people would find that sense of delight and accomplishment in the products. Now, early onboarding experiences were a set of tutorials that people would have a lot of fun with, you know, silly kind of challenges like, you know, dressing up a monkey and sort of in doing so, learning how to find stock photography or lay out, you know, a graphic on the page. You know, we celebrated our community with like surprise and delight moments, you know, trophies when they created a certain number of designs and things like that. But I couldn't agree more with Dan. I think we've always had a priority for, you know, earned media. Actually, you know, PR and communications was really our first channel about getting the word out about Canva. You know, again, we launched from nothing. We were sort of a brand and idea, but no one knew about who we were. And so a lot of that early adoption and awareness actually came from telling the story of Canva and our fundraising journey. You know, pulling together this incredible bunch of sort of seed and sort of angel investors, you know, big names like Lars Rasmussen, who co-founded Google Maps, and Ken Goldman, who was the CFO at Yahoo, and, you know, folks like that that had never, ever invested in, you know, an Australian company before. And so that was big news. We created a lot of hype and enthusiasm around our product launch, you know, talking about the challenge and the problem of traditional design software. That meant that by the time we launched, we had this incredibly engaged waiting list of 50,000 people that were ready to kind of jump in, you know, to the product. Yeah, social media and communities really being sort of the manifestation of that experience. So, you know, today there's literally hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, millions of videos, whether that's people sharing tutorials on TikTok or YouTube or Udemy, people connecting, you know, around sort of shared interest groups, whether it's teachers coming together, you know, to share their lesson plans and how they're delivering class content, or freelancers or small business owners and sort of how they're marketing and growing their business, you know, and that continues to be a really primary focus for us now, albeit at a different scale and, you know, with the complexity of geographies around the world.
Back in those early days, did you spend any money at that early stage in sort of paid media coming out of the gate?
What we really had sort of learned as we came into the Canva journey was the importance of really focusing and picking a niche before trying to go wide. And so for Canva, actually, that early niche was social media content creators. As we started to roll out to our waiting list and sort of do some user testing in those early days, we found that folks who were creating content for social were creating, you know, a lot of visual content, you know, multiple pieces of collateral a day. They often, you know, were sort of making do with tools like Photoshop or even, you know, hacking stuff together in platforms like PowerPoint and other things. And so when Canva came along, they were delighted and you know, really felt that their workflow had been transformed and so created this kind of love and early community around Canva. And we really invested in that. So, you know, we went to all the big social media conferences. We did a lot of training and workshops for them. We invested, obviously, in our own social and sort of communities as well. But that really fueled that early growth and sort of the early products that we built. And then over time, you know, we picked off more and more verticals. So like education, which I mentioned before, became a priority, you know, a few years into the journey. And so we really spent a lot of time understanding teachers and sort of the needs of classrooms and really started to engage with that community, you know, in a sort of more direct and authentic way. And you know, as I mentioned, there's now tens of millions of people using Canva in the classroom from, you know, some of the largest school districts in the world. We really didn't have any budget or any money to spend, you know, really for a large part of our early journey. So we had to be creative and sort of find very cheap, if not mostly free channels to get the word out.
And so, Dan, for you guys, thinking back to some of those early days, is there a point where you kind of look back and go, you hit a certain milestone and then things started to change because of that milestone or that moment in time that you guys hit? Can you tell us a little bit about that, those growth milestones?
Yeah, there's certainly a handful that come to mind. And you know, I'll preface by saying I've only been here at Liquid Death for a little over 2 years. However, I was fortunate to be one of those early investors, literally the first two rounds in. So my eye has been on this company since inception. And in looking at the trajectory, I mean, there was certainly the Tony Hawk moment, you know, the first big name celebrity that had a viral smash, earned media, win and break the internet for the day type of moment. And for those that aren't familiar with it, Tony Hawk was an investor in Liquid Death, and we decided to create limited edition Liquid Death skateboard decks painted with Tony Hawk's blood. And that video was really getting a full phlebotomist to take a bit of that blood and put it in. And so, you know, that was certainly something that took an awareness of this crazy wild water company to a different level. And then I would say, you know, in the early days too, there was a realization that, you know, we are a physical product and there is something that changes when you get the can in your hand. It's how cold it is. It's that crack associated with, you know, a can. It's feeling comfortable in different environments versus, again, the competitor of that crinkly plastic bottle. And so having a partnership early on with Live Nation, becoming their official water, getting into all those concerts, festivals, venues, all the celebrities that are then exposed to it, all the people in those joyous moments having and trying Liquid Death was another massive accelerant. And they're still a great strategic partner to this day.
And a lot of that came, my understanding is that that's because the founder, one of the founders, or the founder, I'm not sure if it's just one, but Mike Cesario, that was his passion. He was into that skateboard crew. He was into alternative music. He was into these festivals. So he knew that world and was able to insert the product into that. And for those who don't know, this isn't just a can of water, but it's a high boy can of water, which is
a tall boy.
What an interesting sort of distinctive brand asset that was back then.
Yeah, and that size, at least in the States, is what's most common with beer. You know, single serve beer. You get a tall boy, you know, take it home or find it in the bar, and the product mirrors, you know, the design aesthetic mirrors beer, you know, an IPA or maybe an energy drink. So it was very intentional. That wasn't by accident.
So Zach, for you, were there similar sort of growth points that you recall from those early days that when they happened, things noticeably changed for you guys?
Yeah, I'd say one of the very early turning points for us was when we brought Guy Kawasaki on as an evangelist for Canva. Incredibly excited to see that someone like Guy was using Canva for their content. You know, as well, this was sort of in the days where you know, we were sort of celebrating a couple hundred signups. And so we ended up getting in touch with Guy, and he, you know, quickly came, you know, to spend some time with the team. And he agreed to come on board as our chief evangelist. So the first time that he'd done that for a company since his Apple days. So that was definitely a big sort of moment in terms of bringing some credibility and really driving some earned coverage of Canberra. And he was particularly well known in that social media audience, which I spoke about earlier. And so that really helped unlock, our growth in that vertical. There's been sort of similar inflection points, like when we rolled out mobile devices. So, did a sort of launch around shifting from the web to also an iPad, iPhone, Android app. That totally opened up, obviously this huge use case for people using Canberra on the go, and so on. And I'd say over the last few years, we've really invested a lot more in brand building, and so that's become a bigger and bigger focus for us as we sort of continue to set our sights on ultimately empowering the whole world. The biggest question is how do we actually increase top line awareness of Canberra, and so that's been a big focus. And through our efforts there, we've been able to sort of shift the dial. Sort of 3x our sort of top line awareness in the US as an example, in the last 2 or 3 years alone.
We'll be right back. This series is brought to you by Tracksuit, a beautiful, affordable, and always on brand tracking tool that helps you answer the question, is what we're doing working? A not so secret fact is that companies pay $100,000 or more for brand tracking, which is out of the question for modern brands whose budgets are under pressure. Tracksuit has been built by marketers for marketers and makes brand tracking 10 times easier and 10 times more affordable. Their research experts do the heavy lifting by using best-in-class practices to craft the questions and get your survey live. Tracksuit surveys thousands of people each week from panels of millions around the world to give you full visibility of your brand health in 30 days, with insights updated for your brand daily. Tracksuit is fast becoming the common language for marketers and agencies to measure, understand, and communicate the value of brand building. Check them out at gotracksuit.com. That's gotracksuit.com. Now back to the show. So how do you make that decision, or how is the decision made at that point that you need to begin to build and invest more in brand?
From a brand point of view, I think we've taken the sort of same approach that we've taken. Generally, we'll start with a particular focus. And so we definitely started that journey, of brand building in the US, ran a test to kind of kickstart, and sort of set aside some budget to iterate and learn. And then, that's really built out over the last few years, to the much more established sort of robust effort in the US, and then we've sort of picked off more and more markets along the way as well.
So was that sort of move to brand, like, what motivated it? Was it your sense that the marketplace had gotten more competitive? Was it your sense that you were planning to expand your offering and therefore you needed to have an umbrella type identity? What was that internal conversation that led to, guys, I recommend that we begin to look at brand as a in the mix with product oriented?
Yeah. We've always thought about it as building the funnel from the ground up. We invested very early on in a successful SEO strategy, making sure that we had content from within the Canva library that was out there, sort of meeting people at that point of intent. So we built that and sort of scaled that channel. And then, on top of that, we started to figure out performance marketing and sort of life cycle. How do we layer on, paid acquisition, whether it was paid search, paid social, on top of that. The whole way along, really looking at what's sort of driving that incremental value, and then the sort of natural next step was on brand building.
Why that progression? Why not brand and performance at the same time earlier? Was there a philosophy that you guys had, or a way of thinking about it?
we're a small startup, you know? And so brand costs a lot of money. And so I think we've had to be really, you know, scrappy and sort of mindful that every additional dollar we're spending on marketing really is incremental and sort of driving that value. And if we were going to be investing, you know, at the top of the funnel, that the rest of our engine was really working as efficiently as possible. So that was definitely one thing. And then the second thing I think is, you know, we've sort of been on a process of really shaping the brand and uncovering what really moves people, you know, to trial. What are the important, you know, attributes to sort of talk to creatively? How do we want to show up? And some of those quicker, more iterative channels were and continue to be a really great testing and sort of playground for us to iterate quickly and sort of evolve. And so I think for both those reasons, we've seen that sort of bottoms up approach as being, you know, the sort of right way to go for us. And of course, being critical, you know, to actually opening up the market, we sort of got to a point where, you know, we've got everything else working as hard as it can for us. We know, you know, once people are aware and have sort of trialed the product and the platform, they're loving it, they're telling others, they're, you know, sort of deepening their usage. And so the sort of biggest lever we could pull at that point was bringing more people in and sort of reaching people that hadn't yet heard about Canva. And so that was really why it was the sort of right time for us on the brand front.
We had a slightly different approach at Liquid Death, and it very well could be because of our industries. I would imagine Canva and software had a bit more product moat. You know, social networks can have network effects with users. You can have patents on UX and you know, code can be proprietary. But in CPG beverage, you really can't own the liquid. And we certainly couldn't own the vessel. You know, you know, Pepsi kind of tastes like Coke, and certainly initially in the water space. We proved this with a campaign called Taze Test, where we took some haters that said we were the worst water in the world and flew them out to LA. We said we'd give you $1,000 if you could blind taste test and pick our water out of the competitors as the worst. If you could, there's the money. If you couldn't, we will tase you with a taser. Our lawyers love the marketing department.
We knew
we couldn't really own that. The only thing you could own is the brand, what it means, what the badge value is holding that can, what it means to follow us on social media or, you know, have that affinity to what we were. So I think it could very well just be a consequence of our respective industries that we focused on brand almost exclusively at the beginning. And it's still the big core of our marketing today.
But I wonder if that's about to flip. I'm curious now, as you've brought in line extensions, are you finding that you now have to begin to promote those product and line extensions as products separately than the brand?
Well, we certainly have to raise awareness that we do have these other product lines. And so that's a job for marketing to do. But everything we put out is brand building in some capacity. It has elements of humor. It's something that really speaks to who the people are behind this company and what we stand for. It's irreverent. It's honest, I think, more than most brands. And it does double duty in some ways. I think, if anything, we're focused on brand education in this next phase, letting people know that we are this healthy beverage. We're not a beer. We're, you know, we have great overall awareness for a four-year-old company. I mean, our metrics are unaided awareness north of 35% in the U.S., which is a testament to how well our campaigns and viral marketing have worked in such a short order. But not all of those folks know that we are a water, a tea, a sparkling soda water.
Are you finding that it's difficult or more challenging to have what many CMOs struggle with and what many marketers are frustrated with, which is those CFO conversations? When you've received a set of goals that you have to achieve from a marketing perspective, how do you make that case to the CFO in order to get those resources? Are there any tips that you've learned over the years that you have found to be helpful?
I feel incredibly fortunate to work for a company that has this incredibly long-term vision for what we're trying to do. You know, literally, that first kind of pitch deck that Mel and Cliff pulled together back in 2010, 2011, we're still building some of the final pieces that were in that original vision for Canberra. And so the whole way along, we've been very much focused on how do we build an enduring company for the long run, prioritizing things that are going to drive, growth over the years to come. And so, I mentioned a couple of those things in the past, but the journey to actually localize the product and the investment that we put into international very early on, that could have been seen as a real detraction from short-term revenue or growth. But, it was obviously critical over the long run, 5 to 10 years later, most of our user base use the product in languages other than English. Markets like, India, Brazil, some of our sort of largest markets for Canva. Same thing with the investment in, platform. And I feel like equally so in marketing. And so we've always taken a long range view and sort of optimized for building the brand, building long-term loyalty and sort of engagement with the product. And so that has really helped, set the tone. And so we operate on, a plan and a vision that's looking many years out, and that really helps those conversations.
First, I would say to most marketers, you should embrace the magic of a budget haiku. You probably need a lot less than what you have. I think, the dominant way we all process the world is through the internet, is through our phones, is through screens, and the internet doesn't like overproduced work. You don't need a phantom cam to get on, a 4x4 inch piece of glass in your hand. I think we have an unfair advantage when it comes to working with celebrities. We've always made them invest in Liquid Death first before they then, got a little bit of bonus cash or equity. But it caused us to get people that really believed in the brand and weren't just there for one and done. But I think, when you're cutting those big checks, be serious about the people that really, love who you are. I think spending a lot of money on agencies can be the wrong way. They're sometimes just too far away from the real impact of marketing. I had a whole career in agencies, all the major acronyms internationally, the best of the best, and never did I hear a creative department say, hey, what did that campaign really do for sales or the metrics that mattered? They were just too far away from it. But I think if you are in-house, having that good partner, the CEO, the CFO, and staying super close to all the metrics that matter. How are your sales moving? In our case, door count and so many other things allows you to make the case, allows you to draw the conclusions as to what is working and what isn't working. And being very honest about what isn't working and what you need to pour gasoline on is another great way to make the case for what you want.
So when you think about brand building, do you think about that? To what degree do you think about that being achieved through paid media?
I think it's a mix of everything that we do. Similar to Dan's comment earlier, every sort of experience that someone has in our product, every piece of paid media that they engage with, every touch point on social, the way that we show up in our physical delivery. We've got a print offering so people can purchase their designs, whether it's business cards or posters or, even t-shirts that have them delivered. So there's that physical touch point. All of those things really shape perception. Obviously, the sort of investment, in paid media is a key component of that, as is earned coverage. But I think similar to Dan, we've really focused a lot on shifting top line awareness. So, we've sort of reached, I think it's about 30% unaided awareness, up from 9% when we had first started investing in paid. And obviously that's a continued focus for us, but, we're definitely prioritizing some of the other elements now of making sure that big job that we have to do is increasing, familiarity with the breadth of products. And we've also really sort of taken hold in the enterprise over the last few years. I've seen, a lot of adoption in larger organizations, but that's a big focus for us at the moment as well. And so, those things are definitely becoming, focuses for us.
So, Dan, what is the Liquid Death media mix right now?
On the paid front, If you mean digital display like banner ads, I think you're more likely to get hit by lightning than click on a banner. So we haven't and we don't. Our paid mix is a little teeny bit at times to prime the pump on a social video that we see has a great ratio of likes, shares, and engagement, but for some reason isn't getting the reach. And I think, you know, whether it's algorithmic suppression, because occasionally our content can be a little more on what the algorithm thinks is risque, or just the platforms want you to pay to play. But I mean, when I talk a little amount of money, I'm talking, you know, like a minimum wage salary for a 2-week check, very, very small dollars. So we'll do that on occasion. We're now looking at connected TV in a more serious way than we have in the past, again, because our goals are more education. But we have this beautiful feeder system where we toss out content in an organic social way. We see what does well. We'll then take that content and put it into an ad expected environment, like a YouTube pre-roll. And we're seeing some of it get over 50% are watching through, even though they have the ability to skip after 5 seconds. That's a great indication that we have something that will be absolutely disruptive when we sandwich it on your TV screen in between, you know, a pickup truck and insurance on the back end. So we are just experimenting with that. But again, the vast, vast majority of every view you see or everything that's written about or increasingly just podcasts and people that are drinking Liquid Death, that's $0. That's free. That's organic. That's earned.
When you're having conversations with Andy Pearson, who's your VP creative, and Greg, who's part of your marketing team, does the conversation ever turn to how do we evolve our tone in a way? Because humor is tough, man. And, you know, it can get old pretty quick, and tone can get old pretty quick. Are you guys conscious of how you plan to execute 6 months down the road, 12 months down the road? Are you conscious of that you've got to be keep getting ahead of things? It's got to stay fresh, or it's going to stop building. It's not going to have the positive impact on the brand.
Well, I disagree a little bit, right? We have Saturday Night Live that's going on, what, its 40th or 50th year. I think you certainly have to, if you have a shtick, it can get old. But if you look at our body of work, we've never done the same thing twice.
Right.
You know, we make fun of marketing, which I think appeals to the majority of people. Nobody loves ads. We make fun of that. We poke and prod at things in the zeitgeist, cultural elements. Again, that's always going to be current because it's what's out there that we're interacting with or reflecting back. We engage different influencers. So I think our approach is able to evolve deep, deep into the future as long as people want to laugh. And I think one of the many waves that we have as tailwinds, you know, pushing Liquid Death forward, I mean, we have certainly consciousness around what you're putting in your bodies and, you know, Gen Z turning away from alcohol and the environment. But I think comedy is a big one. We may have opened Pandora's box with the internet. The world seems more serious, stressful, and dark than probably any decade prior. And people want to laugh. They want to be entertained. And they want to do it in a real way. You know, at the beginning, I mentioned, you know, the 90s sitcom ha-ha with the laugh track. If you go on YouTube and look at an old Friends or Seinfeld episode and they've taken the laugh track out and you look at it, it's lame and weird. And I think that's what a lot of brands who try to do humor actually do. They do this ad funny versus really funny.
I remember when I was talking to your guys in the last episode, we were talking about how do you sort of monitor brand sentiment. And I think it was Andy who said, when we track social sentiment, we want to make sure that at least 50% of it is negative, which was pretty great, right?
Well, yeah. You know, there certainly is something to be said for not trying to be everything to everyone, and we never have. I don't think we aim for 50% negative, but yeah, we're not afraid of some people saying, you know, I don't have your sense of humor. I don't get the joke. I believe you have demons in your water. I mean, we get all sorts of crazy stuff out there, and that's fine. And it galvanizes our fans. I think, you know, as humans, in-group, out-group psychology is core. It's 250,000 years plus of what kept us alive. And I think a lot of brands get it wrong. They identify what they stand for and they proudly proclaim it. We're this, we're that, we're the other, but they forget to define the out-group. And I think that's something special about Liquid Death. We're very happy to say, look, you know, if you don't get the joke, if you take things too seriously, we may not be the brand for you.
Do you guys track, do you track your brand on a frequent basis, or how do you sort of look at brand sentiment and reputation?
I mean, we do what other brands do, of course, with monthly and quarterly surveys with the majors. We treat that directionally. We have a healthy skepticism for the type of person that signs up to take a 30-minute survey. So we don't treat it always as gospel. But I think what would shock most people about Liquid Death is how deeply data-focused we are behind the scenes. We have a 7-foot-tall skate half pipe in the office. We got a crabs table in the court. We have all that, but we're also very much data nerds because we need to be. You know, we're a young company, we're a startup, and so we need every dollar to work super hard for us. So we have proprietary measures and metrics. We're looking at Google search volume over time. We're looking at real nuanced social with the kind of weighted averages and weights proprietarily. How many shares did it get? That's really the holy grail. If you like something enough, you know, tapping the screen twice and getting that heart, that's cool. Making a comment, you know, there's some folks that have time for that. But really, if you're pushing that out to other people, those are the things we want to look at in totality. So we look at it all, we crunch the numbers, and so far it's been a really great predictor of sales and where the brand is going.
It is Zach Kitschke. He is a chief marketing officer at Canva in Sydney, Australia. And it's Dan Murphy, SVP marketing for Liquid Death in Los Angeles. Guys, really enjoyed this conversation. I wish you both and your brands all the best as you continue to grow and continue to expand. Thanks for your time today.
It's been a blast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And we will see everyone on the next episode.